So let's recap what we were saying last time. So first, we have the definition of the Gaussian model, which has an energy where there is some energy per site, Si squared, and some interaction of energy between Si and Sj. And the first thing we did was we separate both, and we say the energy per site, because it's totally independent, right? It's one per site, I can associate it to the measure of integration. So I can say when I sum over configurations, when I integrate over the spin, I don't integrate with uniform measure from minus infinity to plus infinity, but with a Gaussian measure. Okay? So I just put the Gaussian inside the measure and I call this my integration measure. So that's part of the way I weight configurations. Now, I say that I weight them with a Gaussian, that is, I put the energy part directly into the measure. Okay, that's just my choice. Okay, good. So that was our Gaussian measure. So as you see here, I normalized it such that I put some 1 over square root of 2 pi just for convenience, such that this measure is normalized, such that the average of 1 is 1 with this measure, right? Because the integral of the Gaussian gives square root of 2 pi. So when I integrate just the measure, I get 1. And then we add this exponential, which was the interaction term. And then immediately this expression follows, right? And now you should be able to see right away, without any intermediate steps, now with your experience, that equal sign should become obvious. So what did we do? How can you can see? Can you all see how we go from one side to the other? Well, as it is, you cannot, because there is a typo. But now that there is no strange minus, now that there is no strange minus sign, you should be able to see that all we did is for each link, that's exponential of the sum of the links is like product over all the links, and for each exponential, I just expanded it, and I get 1 over n factorial that says how many times I brought down SISJ from each link. So this nij is just a number of sticks that go from I to j. That's what I say. Then, if I bring down from ij, ik, il, and im, the spin I will appear ni times. So ni will be the number of sticks leaving site I. And of course, here ni is equal to 4. And here nij is equal to 2. And here, you can, if you sum the nijs, you get the ni. Right? Then, I get that's how many times si appears. And then I average that si with respect to my Gaussian measure. Right? And in this way, I start with spins, then I have spins and sticks, but now the spins are gone, I integrate them out, and I get this extra weight factor, this ni minus 1 double factorial. This factor, I remind you, is just nothing but expectation value of s to the ni under that Gaussian measure, right? Now we integrate it out, because after you expand down, it's just they are totally factorized. I just get each spin appears a given number of times, and that's it. So now it totally factorized, I just integrate them out, and this gives me the weight for each stick configurations, right? So any question about this formula? Now, the claim, then, is that this formula here, for example, needs to be odd, to be even, sorry. Okay, it can be 0, 2, 4, etc. If it was odd, this weight was 0, right? So implicit there is that this ni is even. Right? Okay, so maybe we can add here. Let's put a Kronecker delta. That's a, ni even. Right? So if there is any ni that is odd, I get 0. And therefore, these configurations almost look like closed paths, right? Because the number of sticks need to close. I cannot have open ends. And the claim is that it's not almost, it's precisely that. The claim is that this is exponential of 1/2 sum of t to the l times the number of closed paths of length l. Here is an example of a closed path of length. How much is the length of this path? Ten, yeah, someone said 10. Yeah, it's 2 squares, 4 plus 4, and then go and come back. It's 8 plus 2, 10. And there are two paths in this example. For example, this orientation and the opposite orientation. So in this example here, for example, in this example, there will be a few paths. In fact, there are, these are two examples of two paths. And in this case, that's the claim that we get 1/2, we sum, the orientation matters, so sometimes often this 1/2 disappears. Okay, so let's just be very explicit. So what we are claiming is that, for example, we get the result, which is how many paths there are with length 0, there are no paths. How many paths there are with length 2? There are twice the volume. Why twice the volume? Because I can have this type of paths that go and come back horizontally, or that go and come back vertically, right? Each of them is just go and come back, so there is no factor of 2 there, because there's no such thing as one orientation and the other, it's just the same thing, it's go and come back. But there are two options, horizontal and vertically, and that's the 2. And they can happen at any position of my lattice, and that's the volume, right? They can happen at any position. Then we go to the terms with length 4. And length 4, there are a few options. For example, there is this one where I'd make a path, and there are two orientations, and hence the factor of 2. Right? This is the two orientations of the path. Now the orientation is different, clockwise or counterclockwise. But there are also a bunch of paths that whose orientation is not important, that could be go and come back horizontally, go and come back vertically, go and make a turn and come back, and you have a bunch of terms that would contribute here. You would should enumerate them all, and this one will not come with any factor of 2. Okay? And each of them can happen any place, so they all come with a volume. So the full result is proportional to the volume. Then with length 6, again, you can have some paths that are just thin paths. They don't come with any factor of 2 because there the orientation doesn't matter. As soon as there is some open region, there is a factor of 2 because I can go in one way or in the other way. And they all can happen at any position, so they all come with a factor of volume.
Yeah. Why does go and come back from like 1 to 2 and go and come back from 2 to 1 not matter?
It does. It does. It's
each of those is 1?
No. It does here, right? So here I go from 1 to 2 and then from 2 to 1.
Yes. But then if you were to do a different path starting at 2, like 2 to 1,
That's the same thing. It's the same path, right? Because what is that path? That path is just these two sticks, right? The starting point doesn't matter. It's the path.
Okay.
It's the loop.
Okay.
Maybe we should not call it path, because path looks like there is a starting and an end. Let's call it loop.
Okay.
It's a closed loop. Okay? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it's a number of closed paths. Yeah. If I don't count the origin, but okay. Maybe we prefer to use... Well, let's use loops instead of paths to emphasize that the origin doesn't matter. Which from the point of view of sticks, it's obvious, right? I have just two sticks. There's no such thing as where's the starting point. I just go and come back wherever you want to start. Okay. Now, let me emphasize that these weights that we put here, often they are one. They are one in the most important cases. They are one when there is a single connection. And they are one, for example, for the corner, where I just have no ambiguity in connecting the sticks. So they are not one, for example, when there is ambiguity in connecting the sticks, then it's 3, for example, when there are 4 lines. Because there were these 3 options of connecting the lines, like this, or like this, right? And to precisely to account for the number of ways of reconnecting the lines, that's why we like this factor of 3. Right? Because the factor of 3 is when you have 4 points, how many ways there are of reconnecting them. So here as well, we would have this factor of 3 for the 3 ways of reconnecting these points. Right? I can reconnect them like this and like this. I can connect them like this and like this. Or I can connect them like this and like this. Can you see what I'm writing? Maybe not very well, but you see, right? I connect these 2 points with itself, these 2 points. Or I connect one stick from here, one stick from here, one stick from here, one stick from here. And then I can connect them like this or like this. You see? Is it clear? Now, notice that also, so that explains this factor. So that's why this factor is so important. It's the recombinations at the vertex. And what about this factor here? Well, this factor here just tells me, so this factor here, it's very important because it's related to recombinations. So that's crucial. But this factor is also crucial. That says that the sticks are indistinguishable. Right? So let's remember. So here, for example, in this example, right? In this example, we see that here, for example, we have a factor of 3. And because of these two lines, we get a factor of 1/2. Right? What is this 1/2 factor? This 1/2 is here because for each configuration, there is one where I swap the two sticks, but that's exactly the same thing. If I swap the two sticks, there's no distinction. If I put one red, one yellow, there's no difference in going in the red and coming back in the yellow, or going in the yellow, coming back in the red. So the sticks are indistinguishable. So whenever I have a stick configuration, there is another one that differs by swapping sticks, and I don't want to overcount that if I want to do paths. So I better have a 1/2 that cancels that extra 2, right? See? So for example, this factor of 3, once we will reconnect, this factor of 3 will tell me that there is this path and then this path. Right? This is one way of reconnecting. There is another one which is just go like this and come like this. And there is another one which would be connect like this and come like this. But you see, right, this is just reorganizing the 4 points here. So I'm highlighting the 3. These 3 are these 3 options that we have here. But you see that this, going back and forth, there are 2 options here. And they are not, it doesn't matter, right? Here I'm saying I go on the stick, which is, say, red, and I come back on the yellow stick. And here what I did is I was here, and I went on the yellow one first, and then I came back on the red. That doesn't matter, it's the same thing. Just go and come back. Right? So there better be a factor of 1/2 that says that whenever I have a configuration that is the same under reshuffling of the sticks, I want a factor 1 over that degeneracy to just simply cancel out. Okay? So that factor, this factor, takes the degeneracy into account. So whenever we have a configuration that would be redundant, it makes sure that the weight works out. And therefore, as I told you, just by looking at this expression, once you understand that you first say sticks are paths, but then you say, well, I'm worried because there is reconnections, there are many reconnections, so a single configuration of sticks could become different paths. But we say, oh, but that's precisely accounted, that's that factor. But then you say, oh, but there are configurations that you will be overcounting because you swap sticks and it's the same path. And I say, no, that's also that factor there that fixes that. But then you have no more objections. Then you say this is really a sum of independent paths. They are independent, and therefore the result is the exponential of a single path. Yeah. So that's the derivation, the full derivation, whereas yesterday we did the one by exhaustion, right? Just by showing that it had to work. So, but because we are fresh today, let's just work one more example. Let's just work out this example. So let's see. So what's the weight? What weight do we get here? So please tell me. So again, most of the part is trivial, right? One here, one at the corner. It's only in the interesting parts that you get some weight. So what total weight would you get in this case? So it's real. So again, where are the weights coming from in the graph? From here, and from here. So in total, what is it? 3 and 1/2. So in total, 9/2. And now let's check if it works. Okay, now let's check if it works. So that's the prediction. And now let's see again that it works. So this 9/2, I would say that when I reconnect, I could reconnect into something like this. I'm not. That's one option, right? I reconnect these sticks in a way to make these closed paths. That's the most disconnected one. Then there are also ones that are disconnected but into two components. Like this, plus reflection. Right? Let's say plus reflection around this line. There's the other one where it's the other one on the left. And then there are the connected ones. Right? If I didn't forget, I think this is it. Did I forget something? I think this is correct. Right? So now let's remember what's the weight. So this weight, it would be 1/2 times 2 because there are two orientations for this square. From this one, it would be 1/2 times 2. From this one, it would be 1/2. I'm writing what I expect based on that expression. Because I expand down 2 squares from the exponent in my exponential, I would expect a 1/2 factorial because I expand 2 squares, which are equal from my exponent there. But when I expand, I have, remember, the 2 squares here and the 2 squares here, right? When I expand, so that cancels, so it's times 2, so this factor is nothing. So actually, from expanding, there's nothing. And so 1, 1, 1, 1/2. So in total, this thing would be 1/2, this graph. So here we have 1/2 times 2, and here 1/2 times 2. And there are the reflection. So in total, 1, and because of the reflection, 2. And here? Well, here, so we have a few options because we can do like this and like this. But we can also do, if we call this, if we say it's this and this, right? But we can also flip both. So it's this and this, or flip just one, right? We can go around and then here come back, or we can. I didn't flip the orientation here, did I? Yeah, I wrote the same thing here. So here I keep this guy and I flip this, or I can keep this guy and flip the other one. You agree? This would be 4 different orientations. So each of them would contribute to 1/2. So I would get 4/2. And 2 plus 2 plus 1/2, in total, I get 9/2, right? Which is what we were expecting here. Yes?
Wait, since the last diagram is connected, why can we choose different orientations for each side? Don't I need to be consistent with the orientation all throughout the diagram?
Yeah.
No. Why?
Because changing the orientation of both sides is equivalent to permuting the joints.
I see what your confusion. So your confusion is that you are thinking of these points as splits. But this, I'm just drawing these two lines split to help you visualize the graph, right? I go and I come back. This point is the same point, right? So I can go and come through in the bottom or go to the top, right? So I mean, this two, it's not like they are open, these points there, right? They're just going, coming, right? This the correct way of drawing this picture, but it's going to become messy, is like this, right? Where we say I go like this, like this, like this. I start, let's say I start here. I start here. So here is where we start. And then I go like this, like this, like this, like this. And then I go here. And now here I decide. I can continue, for example. And then I go here. Okay. But now good luck understanding what this is, right? If I don't open up. But that's that's what the path is. Okay. And so it works. And again, I want to emphasize that from the point of view of just ways of contracting the lines, here there were a bunch of options that were giving extra factors of 2, and it was crucial to have those 1 over 2 factorials to cancel them. And so this it's both very important that we treat the sticks as indistinguishable, because we only care about the picture. We don't care about which stick did you go and which stick did you came back through. The sticks are the same. And so if we do want to identify it with paths, and so both factors were crucial. It was crucial that the sticks are indistinguishable, and it was crucial that we had the right combinatorics. And that's it. So that establishes the duality. So we just established the duality between Z of the Gaussian model and the partition function of the random walk. Okay, so that's done, but that's not the full thing. There was another thing, which was the claim, the observation that Si, Sj of the Gaussian model was also related to a nice quantity, was related to this partition function, to this sum of t to the L, number of walks of length L that go from site I to site j. Right? That was the generating function, summing over all paths, measuring the length. Right? And we have this quantity in the random walk picture. And now let's see why this picture is correct. Right? Let's see why this picture is correct. So what is this quantity here? So so this is done. And this is what we are going to do today. Now. Okay, so why is this true? Because this, what's the difference? Huh? This is equal to what? It's equal to the same expression. So it's equal to 1 over the partition function, Z, times exactly the same expression. Okay, I'm going to be generous and write it. So it's product over I integrate over each spin of my lattice with the Gaussian measure. And then there is exponential of t times the summation over all links I and j, Si, Sj. Let's use a and b, because I'm using I and j as summation index. Sorry, let's use a and b here. A and B. And so the only difference is that here I add SA, SB. Right? That's the only difference. Do you agree? Just I'm expectation value of SA, SB, so it's exactly the same thing with SA, SB here. And so what do we get? We get the same type of expression, so 1 over Z times the sum over sticks t to the number of sticks, product over all links I and j, 1 over nij factorial, that came from expanding the exponential, exactly the same thing. Now, if the spins I and j are not a and b, there's no difference. Product over I which is not A or B, same thing, ni minus 1 double factorial, right? Because if it's not A or B, it's exactly the same thing. And what if I is A or B? What should change? What changes there in the formula? What do I need to multiply now? Times. What is missing if it's A or B? What happens? So now we take care of this term here, where A and B. So let's put the parentheses, it's not needed. So there is a factor here. What factor do I miss? For A and for B?
Is it and A?
Right. So for if I bring down sticks, right? But A and B already have one spin there because I put them there, SA and SB. So how many spins are there at A? It's the number of sticks plus one, because there's already one that I put there in SA. Therefore, instead of N minus one double factorial, I get NA double factorial and NB double factorial. Right? So that's the new factor. So A and B are shifted by one because I put explicitly two spins there. Right? And now the condition is what? It's delta. So it's delta that Ni must be even except Na and Nb. Because Na and Nb, there's already a spin there. So except Na and Nb, those must be odd. But then this is nothing but saying that what we should do is, what kind of configurations contribute here? I have my lattice, right? And here is A, and here is B. And what kind of paths I can have? For example, I can have a closed path here. Those n's are even, that's perfect. Those have n even. But Na and Nb, I need an odd number, so I need a stick that ends on A and a stick that goes to B. And now it can be, I don't know, something like this, for example. So that's an example of a configuration. Right? And now everything we had before, to make sure that I can associate these paths that go from A to E, these sticks to paths, are there. For example, here I have a reconnection. Right? So do I think of this as one path that goes like this plus a closed loop, or do I think of a loop that goes like that, or a loop that goes like this? There are a bunch of options. But that's fine. I do have the combination, the factor 3 there that takes all those options into account. Right? And so this is indeed equal to what we are indeed summing over paths that go from A to B, and then a bunch of closed loops. And these guys are independent from each other. They can touch, not touch, be far away. And the combinatorics, like before, it was they were such that the closed loops, it was just like a bunch of independent closed loops. Now we have one open loop and a bunch of independent closed loops. Right? So what we see here is that we get one open path plus any set of closed loops. Plus any number of closed loops. And they are independent from each other. Like before, the closed loops were independent. We're just getting the weights of independent closed loops. And therefore, what we get is that this thing here is perfectly given by just the sum. It's given by the closed loops, which is Z. They are independent. And Z is going to cancel this Z. Times the partition function of a single path from A to B, right? They are independent. Z is any number of closed loops. Z, A, B is the partition, the sum over paths that go from A to B. And therefore, these terms cancel. These guys cancel. And this partition function is nothing but this. And so we did it.
Sorry, I didn't see in the formula how we can have one open path and any set of closed loops. I don't see.
Now, what is the what's the condition that we don't get zero weights? It's that whenever we have a spin, it appears an even number of times, right? Because we have a Gaussian, and each spin, if it appears an odd number of times, when I integrate, I get zero. So each spin needs to appear an even number of times. So what does it mean? If it's a random spin, it means that the number of sticks that go to that spin must be even, right? Because at each stick ends with a spin, right? But if it's A or B, because I put explicitly an extra spin A and B, the number of sticks that end on A must be odds. The number of sticks that ends on B must be odds. So I end up summing over configurations where A and B are not part of a closed loop, but rather they are the beginning and ends because they have an odd number of sticks going there. If it's one, it's pretty obvious, right? Now let's draw an example where it's not one. Maybe that's your confusion, where it's three. So let's suppose our configuration A is here, B is here, and let's draw this path where we put three sticks here and then one stick here, for example. And OK, if there is a lattice, we can also have, as we said, a closed path here, but that's totally independent. So that's an example of a configuration. Now let's see, what is this configuration? So here we have, it's not ambiguous, we have a closed loop, right? And the weight is perfect, 1/2 × 1, perfect. Independent closed loop. What about here? What is this path? Well, it's one. How can I identify this as a path? I can say that this is a path that connects A and B. Now, this thing could be a path that connects A and B plus a loop that is doing this. And that's actually the only way I can interpret that as a path. You agree? There's no other way. Right? Or is there?
From B to A and then...
Ah, no, there is another way. Exactly what? There is this and there is also exactly... Right? There are these two possibilities. Okay. So let's see that the weight comes out correctly, right? So this is just, that's one option, right? One. And here, there is just, again, one option, one. So we expect the total thing to be two. Let's see if we are missing anything before we do the count. Now let's work out the weights here. Let's work out if the weights work, if they add up, if they give two. So here we have the usual weights. This gives 3 − 1 double factorial. Here we have three lines, so we have 1/3 factorial. They are indistinguishable, these sticks. Here we have one line, but B is special. So now the weight is just 1 double factorial. So it's just one. And here we have three lines. So we have 2 double factorial because it's an endpoint, right? It's A. And so in total, this gives 2, this product of all these numbers. Please give 2. Does it give 2?
Middle is 4 − 1.
Yeah. OK. So I'm not going to do the computation, not to be. Actually, it doesn't give 2.
The threes just cancel. It's just 3/3 factorial.
So three, the threes cancel.
The 2 double factorial is also.
Ah.
That is 0.
Oh. Yeah.
2 double factorial is 2. Okay. Yeah. Good.
2 double factorial should be 3 double factorial.
Yeah. 3 double factorial. So there are three lines, 1 double factorial, 3 double factorial, 3 factorial, giving 3. Okay, so let's be more careful. Actually, here it was, I did a mistake. So this yeah, sorry. This is one half, right? The partition is one half, and for this closed guy. So in fact, I want three halves, right? The closed loop go and come back was giving one half, right? So it was three halves in total. Now let's see if three halves works. So 3 factorial is 3. The 3 cancels that 3, but there is a 2 there. And that there is a 3 here. So 3 over 2 is 3 halves. It has to work based on this stick in the back. Okay. So that, so those examples where there is an odd number which is not 1, you need to interpret like this. It's either a path that goes and come back, or it's there is a closed loop there, and then there is a path with 1. But because the number is odd, those are always, even if you reconnect everything, it's a start and an end. A is always the start, B is always the end. Okay.
Can you go back to the reasoning why the integral dmu si of the SASB gave the NA double factorial and NB double factorial on this equality here?
Here?
Yeah.
So, because what should the factor give concerning SA? It should give what is the number of spins at position A. And the spins at position A are the number of sticks that end on position A plus 1, because I put 1 SA explicitly there. And so the weight is different from this by adding, by shifting here by 1. Is it clear?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. And therefore, we just established this duality over here. Now, I would like to, so we just established this duality. And so next, it's time, I would like to discuss a couple of things. So one is universality. I would like to recap a few things. We saw universality in random walks, and now I would like to see universality in the Gaussian model, right? And what's the relation between these two types of universality? Remember that universality when the random walks was the statement that I start with any distribution from my probabilities and I converge towards the Gaussian distribution at large distances. So let's recap what it would mean for this Gaussian, in this Gaussian model. So that's one thing we want to do, it's universality. And two now, is now that we have this general picture, that we see that whenever we have a model, if we think in terms of this low temperature expansion like this, right? Then there are many models we could imagine that will lead to some kind of paths. It's anything that you would write, any measure, for example, that you would write, not necessarily Gaussian, it would be the same thing, but I would change just this weight here, right? I would replace it by this. So now we could imagine immediately other high temperature expansions for other models. And this will lead to new dualities. Now that we have experience, it's nice to go back and think of some interesting dualities. And here, what we are going to do is, let's first study the ON model and see some relation between the ON model and self-avoiding walks that we described in the first lecture. And then we will see a duality between the Ising model and winding walks. And through this duality, we will then solve the 2D Ising model. So the plan is to start by the middle of the lecture in the afternoon and finish tomorrow this solution. So that's the plan for the end of the week. Let me just say a few more one more word, which is that this part here is will be mostly based on the first reference, which are the lecture notes by McGreevy and the book by Cardi. This part here, mostly that. This part here, as I said, was based on the second reference, which was the book on RG. No, it was not, sorry. This part was mostly based on Parisi. And this solution of the Ising model here is based on the second reference, on Parisi, and also on Feynman. Okay, in case you want to check the references for what we are seeing. Okay, so that's the plan. So we are going to continue exploring these dualities now of the Gaussian model, and then move to other models till this morning. That's not working. Okay. Okay, so universality then. So let me remind you first that what we saw in universality was in the random walk, we start with some probability with moments C2, C3, C4, and so on. And this converges to a Gaussian with C2 not equal to zero, but all other Cn equal to zero at large distance, right? So all that it was a universal large distance behavior. So what we want to see here is a universal large distance behavior of our correlation function in our spins, for example. So here in the Gaussian model, we have a correlation function of my spin at some position I and spin at some position j, and let's say that they are r apart. They are some distance r apart. And then the result was equal to the integral d dq over 2 pi to the d in d dimensions. So there implicitly we were in two dimensions, but it could be in d dimensions. E to the I q dot r over 1 minus 2t sum of cosine of q mu. And this stuff down here was approximately equal to some constant plus q square at small q. And small q correspond is what we need if I want to study large distances. And it's the fact that we expand in small q that it's the origin of universality. So let's imagine, for example, let's suppose we change t sum over I and j of Si, Sj. Let's suppose we deform this and we change it to t sum over I and j, Si, Sj. plus t prime, and then we sum of Si, Sj, where let's put some double bracket like this, where this would indicate that the distance between I and J equal to 2, right? So we sum over positions that are separated by next to nearest neighbors, right? So this would be a nearest neighbor interaction with some strength T, and here it would be a next to nearest interaction between these spins with some smaller strength T prime. And let's add even another term. Let's say I have T prime prime sum of Si, Sj, where I is here and J is here. So the separation J minus I equals square root of 2. So they are here. I had a connection here with weights T prime prime in the diagonal. And we could even add plus dot dot dot, but I don't care about this dot dot dot. Let's suppose we stay here. And now, yes.
Are these different forms of interactions as well? Could you have SISJ squared or something like that?
I could also do that. I could also add extra types of interactions. SISJ squared. But right now I want to add just nearest neighbor, but I want to add just bilinear in spins, but with different distances. And now, because I want the model to still be a Gaussian model, I don't want to introduce nonlinearities. So I want it to be Gaussian, so I want it to be still quadratic. So what would change in what we did in the Gaussian model? So let's see, what would change first in the first way we solved it? Remember, the first way we solved it, we did not solve it like this, with this duality. We just computed explicitly this correlation function of two spins there, and we wrote it in terms of the Fourier transform of this, of the interaction A. Right? Remember, before we saw that the correlation function of the spins, that this expression down here is not something random. This expression is just the inverse of the Fourier transform, this thing down here. The denominator is just the Fourier transform of my interaction Q. Right? It is just literally, this is the Fourier transform. The one was from the leading term where they do nothing, and then the neighbors. I sum and I get e to the iq, e to the minus iq, I sum in all directions and I get this term here, right? So that was the origin. So immediately from that point of view, we can just change accordingly. So let's write immediately what would be a of q, the Fourier transform, now goes to what is before is the denominator, and now what does it become? It becomes the same thing as before, 1 minus 2t sum of cosine of q mu. But now there are some extra terms. There is a term with t prime and a term with t prime prime. Okay? So let's see. So tell me, please, what would you write? I remind you that this thing, this full thing here, is just sum over t times sum over directions plus minus and orientation mu. Sorry, direction mu and orientation plus minus e to the plus minus q in direction mu. In other words, it's equal to t summation e to the q dot unit vector in the direction mu plus minus, and I sum over plus minus and over mu. So now what would change now if I had this extra t prime and t prime prime in my Fourier transform? What term would I add now? Let's add in blue the extra terms. What should I add here? So what is the contribution of this t prime now? What is the difference between the Fourier transform of this term and this term?
Cos q goes to cos 2q.
Is it clear to everyone? Now this unit step is not e mu, it's twice e mu. And so I just put a factor of 2 here. So this is exactly the same as this, but sum of cosine of 2q mu. Okay, that's good. Now what about the one with t prime prime? This diagonal one. Not exactly. Not exactly.
We have a different unit vector.
Sorry?
We have a different unit vector.
Exactly. You have a different vector. So that vector is what? It's, for example, if this is x and y, what is this vector?
X squared.
Yeah, x plus y, right? So now I would get minus, okay, so let's say t prime. And let's write 2t prime. Let's write the first term, cosine of, for example, qx plus qy, if I go and get the right. Plus, but I can go in that direction over there, and that would be cosine of minus qx plus qy plus a bunch of terms. Right? So this is this direction, this would be this direction, and so on. You can write the sum over mu not equal to nu, it's a 1/2, blah, 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 if you want. So, right? Now, this would be how it changes. And therefore, the correlation function between my two spins changes. Instead of A, I go, it goes to the new A. So it changes. And that's correct. It should change. I'm changing the model, the correlation function changes, right? And I get some new thing here. However, it should change. So it means that microscopically, when my distances are like 5 or 7 sites, it makes a big difference if I interact nearest neighbors or next to nearest neighbors or diagonal, if I'm looking at like 5, 10, 7 sites. But however, what happens when I go to large distances? When I go to large distances, however, I just expand in small momenta. And if, and you see that all this thing, the full thing, it's some number plus some number times q squared plus dot, dot, dot if I expand that small momentum. There is no term in q because it's symmetric. Q and minus q, there is a symmetry, right? So if we are doing weights that are symmetric, going to the left, to the right, diagonal in one direction or the other, if there's no bias, then there is no q. So it's something plus something q squared plus something q to the 4 plus whatever. And so if I am at small q, that is, at large distances, this m square will go to a new m square. But that's it. So the m does depend on the details, right? So, but that's the only thing we see. When I zoom out, I just see what is the new m, and that's it. And then we go back to saying that at large distance, the result is this field theory propagator, where M does depend on the microscopic details, but the universal form of the propagator is the same. It's just this exponential with this thing downstairs. Okay? And so we are led to the same type, 1 over M squared plus Q squared propagator at large distance. And this is nothing but universality. Yeah. And notice that in this language, if I add an extra term, like t prime prime, and so on, what happens now in this language? Now, in this language, if I write this, so that's in the first type of derivation. So that's one, this is using the solution in terms of the Fourier transform. Now, the second, let's discuss just for a second, what happens in this language of sticks. Right? In this language of sticks, what I will do is I will write the interaction now. It's product over ij e to the t s I s j. But then there's also a product over ij nearest neighbors e to the t prime S, I, S, J, etc. Now I write the interactions like this. And now when I expand this, this leads to sticks between I and J, any number of them. Right? But now on top of these sticks, from this expansion, I also have a model where I can have big sticks between next to nearest neighbors. Right? So this leads to a new type of sticks, type of longer stick. Right? And then I could even have another point here and a diagonal stick, maybe even three of those, coming from the expansion of the next term, product over the diagonal e to the t prime prime s I s j. Right? And this would lead to this term. And therefore, I would end up in this picture from a sum of configuration of sticks of three types of colors. Right? Can be red sticks, blue sticks, or beige sticks. Not white. Okay, or almost white sticks. Right? And then what will we say? We will say, for example, that what will be the condition that we get non-zero result is if the spin appears to an even power, which now means that the total number of sticks of all types ending on that point must be even, not just of red type or blue or white, but the sum of all types must be even. So for example, this would not be a good configuration. This is odd here. This is odd. This is odd. This is odd. Okay, actually, all of them are it will be zero because of all of that. So it must be some configuration. Let's add, for example, an extra stick here. Right? So here I would have another stick. Now this is even. This is even. This is still odd. So let's put another guy. Let's put four. Now this is an example of a good configuration. Right? And now this configuration, I could map to a path. I could say this is just a path. For example, it could be one of those paths like this. Right? This could be a path like this. I go, I come back, and then I go like this. Or it could be a bunch of disconnected paths. And what would be the description of this path? It's a path where, with some probability, I jumped here. That's my first step. With some other probability, I jumped here. That's my second step. Then with some probability, I actually did a big jump, and I jumped all this. And then there was a probability of jumping this diagonal and so on. So it's one of those models, one of those first random walks, where we said that instead of being 1 over 2D in all directions, now we have a PI for each possibility. This would be like P1, this would be P2, etc. Where we have a bunch of directions we could jump, and that was exactly the random walk that we also solved. So we see also at this microscopic language with these sticks that putting more interactions just means allowing in the random walk language not just steps between neighbors, but other steps with other relative probabilities. Okay? But of course, we knew that from the explicit solution. Okay? And so we conclude that the various small interactions between spins in the Gaussian model don't matter at large distance, in the same way that the small jumps and the small microscopic distribution of the probabilities, whether diagonals are allowed or not, doesn't matter in the random walk, right? Effectively, in the end, it's all Gaussian. You say in the random walk, I forbid diagonal steps. Okay, you can forbid, but after a few RG steps, they are generated automatically, right? Because I say that diagonal steps are not forbidden, but now you RG and you got exactly a diagonal step. Right? If you coarse grain a few. So it's not really up to you. Forbid whatever you want, but it doesn't matter, right? You end up with diagonal steps anyway. And here as well, we can say, oh, the interactions are just vertical and horizontal. Okay, my friend, but you will get rotation invariance at large distances. Doesn't matter. You will eventually generate this rotational invariance configuration. Just because at small distances, by symmetry, we get Q squared. And therefore, just because Q square is the first thing I can write, I know that I will get a rotation symmetry. Because there's no other thing I could write. Right? If I could write something which is not just Q square, then I could not get rotational invariance. But I'm guaranteed to get universality, and in particular, rotational invariance. So if you were in the colloquium yesterday when Ati was saying that at large distances we often get some accidental symmetry because there's nothing else we could write, that's a very sharp example. Right? So just because of q to minus q, the only thing I could write is q square. And Q squared turns out to have rotation symmetry, right? Q squared is invariant under rotation. And therefore, even though in my short lattice it was not rotational invariant, left, right, up, down were the key directions, at large distances I get something that is rotational invariant, right? But it's approximate. If I start going to shorter and shorter distances, eventually I see signs of all these cosines that say that there is one direction which is special, then there is a diagonal, and so on. And we start seeing the detail. Okay. Yeah.
I'm not pretty sure what was the motivation for actually adding in different interactions. Was it the same ideas we had before that we are zooming out and then we are seeing these new interactions being generated because of the zooming out?
No, here it could be just physics, right? So what are these spin interactions, right? Just a bunch of molecules that have some magnetic moments, and they couple to the neighbors because the interaction decays with distance. And because they are more or less at a fixed position, the interaction is just the value of the interaction after it decayed a little bit. But then it is not zero immediately after, so it still continues decaying. So if you want to model the next guy, it still feels some interaction, but a bit weaker. And then the next guy, it still feels a bit of the interaction, but a little bit weaker. And then you truncate, because after four or five sites, the interaction is so screened that it's negligible already.
So the idea.
So to make the model very realistic,
yeah,
you put many parameters. If your goal is to do spectroscopy and see the crystal inside and so on. But then you zoom out and you see that all those details are washed out. And all that matters is M squared. That tells you what the correlation length will be at large distances, and you will recover. And everything will just be in this constant, or this ratio of these two constants.
But the correlation length will change because of...
The correlation length will change a little bit, but that's dimensionful, right? So it's true that, and that's just different materials have different correlation lengths. You change the molecules, you change the correlation length. Then if you measure things in units of correlation length, because correlation length is dimensionful, you would say things are all the same. Because you say my correlation length is my unit. That's my meter. It's whatever this material has as correlation length, I define that as my unit. Yeah. Good. Very good. So now I think I'm done. We are done concerning random walks, Gaussian model. And let's discuss now these ideas of exploring other high temperature dualities. So for that, let's introduce a model, which is called the ON model. And the ON model is defined as an integral product over all spins in my lattice. Again, some integration measure, d mu, for my spin at position I, but now the spin is a vector. Right, it's not a number, it's a vector. And then we will get an interaction product over all neighbors I and j exponential of t. And then I want to write si and sj, but they are vectors. So what could I write? The dot product, right? Some energy that they want to be aligned. Yeah. And then this measure here is just the integral over this n-dimensional vectors with a constraint that these vectors, S square, have size n. So it's like, so that would be the definition of our model. And you see that the idea would be that this condition, that I have n-dimensional vectors of size n, it's more or less like saying that the components of the vector need to be like plus or minus one, right? Instead of being in an hypercube, being in an hypercube is like the Ising model. They need to be plus minus one, right? Plus minus one, so they are like the vertices of an hypercube. And now we are saying, instead of being the vertices of an hypercube, be on an hypersphere. Perhaps it's not so different, so it would be a way of motivating this model. Go from an hypercube to an hypersphere. Okay? So
why is the radius not one?
Sorry?
Why is the radius not one?
That's my definition, my model.
Okay.
I just define to be n. If n is 5, it's size 5. I can rescale and then put the and then make it 1, of course.
Do we assume any relationship between the n, the dimension of the spin of the vector s, and the lattice, or not?
No.
Okay. The lattice is still the dimension.
Yeah. So this lattice is L times L to the d points. Cubic lattice. Okay. And so that's our measure of integration. And that's, again, a model. So let's just summarize, where now I have my lattice. And at each point, I have a vector in some direction that is inside some fixed sphere. Right? The sphere is a fixed size n, and at each point, I have a vector. So let me emphasize that n has nothing to do with d. Right? N, it can be a two-dimensional lattice and five-dimensional vectors, one five-dimensional vector at each point. Right? Or if you want, it could be, for example, a two-dimensional material where at each point I have a three-dimensional spin in space-time, in space, if you want, like some condensed matter application. Okay? So n is not has nothing to do with d. N is what we call target space. It's what kind of fields I have. And one example is before. Before we had just a real number at each position of a lattice that is any dimension. In that case, n would be 1. Okay? So when n is 1, for example, this is just the Ising model. Because then s is just a number, and the square of the number is 1, so the number is plus minus 1. Right? So this is Ising if n equal to 1. N equal to 1, it's a one component vector that squares to 1, so that means it's plus minus 1, so that's just Ising model. Okay, so that's our definition of our ON model. And now, the idea is to see what is this model, right? And what is in particular, now we could ask, what is this correlation function equal in terms of sum of loops? What is the dual loop formulation of this? And we could ask about SA, SB, what is this in terms of a sum over paths from A to B? We can ask if such formulations exist, and if so, what are they? Right? So why would it exist? Because you see that I could repeat exactly the same thing that we did. That exponential I expand, and now I have sticks. And again, the model is invariant under s to minus s. So the number of endpoints also must be even. So I end up summing over exactly the same configurations. So what changes with respect to in that model, with respect to that model over there? What changes? So there is an obvious thing and one more subtle. The more subtle one is that now the s has components, so we need to take care of the vector structure. Right? So n is a component, so I need to be careful about the components of s. Let's ignore that detail. Then what changes compared to that and that? What would change in that formula there? For the partition function, say.
The recombination.
Sorry?
The recombination.
It is just the weight. Right? The idea, I expand, I get sticks. There is 1 over nij factorial, that's just expansion of exponential. But then this guy here, this is what is very special. The fact that this is equal to this is for the Gaussian model. Now we have to compute this. Right? So now we have to see what this is. Okay. So the idea, what we are going to do here is we go here. We go to sticks plus spins. And then we integrate out the spins and we get just a model of sticks. And then the model of sticks, we make the connection with paths via combinatorics, making sure about these three combinations and so on. That's what we did last time, right? And here, what we need to learn how to get rid of the spins, what we need is the analog of how do I integrate at some position I my spin to some power n with respect to some measure. And this step here of going to sticks plus sim is exactly as before. So here there's nothing new. But here, integrating out the spins, I need to work out my new average here. Yeah. So let's discuss a bit these averages in the ON model and how do they differ there. So just to summarize, so before we had expectation value of Sn was equal to delta n being even for the Ising model. And it was equal to n minus 1 double factorial, and then also needs to be even for the Gaussian model. And now we want to ask, what is this for us? Right? Now, here we have the first thing we have to be careful is that now S is a vector, so it doesn't make sense to just raise it to the power n. So what we would ask in our case is, what is the expectation value of S with component A1? Now, this is the component of the vector. Right? So this is component A1 of S. And now I could have SA1, SA2, SAN. That's what we would replace now, just S to the N, and now it's this. Do you agree? Yeah. So first of all, this is equal. What happens when N is odd? What happens when n is odd? It's zero, right? Because there is a symmetry of s to minus s, right? Everything is invariant under flipping all spins. So this is also only non-zero when n is even. That's crucial. That's what guarantees that we have the same picture of even number of sticks. But then what multiplies this is some tensor with indices a1 up to an that we have to compute. Okay. So let's work out a few examples first. So first of all, we normalize such that the expectation value of 1 is equal to 1. That's not obvious here, but that's because I did not say that there is a normalization here, and I choose this n to be whatever it needs so that equation is true. Okay, and now we ask, what is expectation value of S component A, S component B? Let me emphasize, these are components. These are not positions, right? So we are discussing not position. We are discussing one site. We are at one site. We are not discussing SA and SB at two different sites. It's the same site, component A, component B. Is it clear? So what is this? What is this object? What can we tell about this object?
It's the same that we had before.
Well, first of all, the same as what we had before. What do you mean?
Like for the Gaussian model, with only spins, like numbers.
Mm-hmm. Not exactly, because it's not Gaussian measure. Now I integrate over all spins with a constraint that they are on the sphere. But the first thing we notice is that what is this result if A is not equal to B? Zero, right? Because there is a symmetry of flipping not only all spins to minus a spin, but each component to minus its component, right? And so this needs to be proportional to delta AB. That's the first thing. And then there is a number here times a number. But now we can do a trick to find this number instead of computing this average. What can we do now to find this number? If I know this equation, but I don't know the number. Sorry? From that delta, in other words, SA and SB is complicated. But what happens if I contract A and B and I sum over A? So if I contract A and B and sum over A, what do I construct here? S squared. But S squared is equal to N. Right? So if I contract over A and I sum over A, so I set B equal A and I sum over A, here I get expectation value of S squared, but S squared is just N, so this is just N on the left-hand side. Right? And what do I get when I do the same thing on the right-hand side? Here, what do I get? When I set B equal A and I sum over A, what do I get? So when B is equal to A, what's this Kronecker delta? It's equal to 1, when B equal to A, and I sum, so I get N. So what do we conclude? What do we conclude about this hashtag? It's 1. So we conclude this hashtag is just equal to 1. Okay, that's interesting. So it means the following already. It means that when we will have sticks, this hashtag being equal to 1 is the analog of exactly this one here. It means that now when I have just one connection here, right? Sorry, I'm wrong. It's the analog of this one here, When I have two spins, right, like there is no ambiguity. I just continue, and I got one here. So this one, this being one, is exactly the one of the recombinations, right? So this was the one that said that when I have spins, and when I have just two spins here, there is no ambiguity. I just connect them, right? And when you have a stick like this and a stick like this, you just connect them. Right? And there's no ambiguity, and I get just one here in connecting these two sticks. Right? But here, what we learn is that it's not just one, it's one times delta AB. Right? So in other words, for example, we'll have a configuration where I put here A, and then I put a stick. Then I have some spin, I put a stick, some spin. And this is B. Okay, let's be super careful that now A and B are this A and B. Now they are positions. Maybe. Yeah. Okay. Here they are positions.
You can use Greek letters for the indices, for the components.
It's okay. It's a good exercise to make sure you are understanding things. It should be obvious, right? I could use capital. Then I would have to change there and so on. You know? It's obvious by the context what I'm doing, right? Now, here, I have spin at position A, right? And then, so suppose here I insert spin at position A, and now, okay, now let's do what you are saying. Component capital A. And here, suppose we put spin at position B, component capital B. Right? Now what happens? I bring down a stick, right? So I put another spin here and here, and now these forces, right? This spin component, right? If I have here this spin component here, I bring down this stick. This stick, remember, means bringing down S dot S at that position A, and that this let this be position A prime, dot A S at position A prime. In other words, if I put a component here, let's put a component C, C I sum over C. That's what it means to bring this down. But now, when I integrate out the spin here, it forces the component A to be equal to the component C by this Kronecker delta. And then, when it will force the component to be the same here and here, the component to be the same here and here, and the component to be the same here and here. So each time I bring down a stick, now I should think that the sticks do have colors, and they have n colors, right? And if I start with red, I can go to red, but I cannot go to yellow. I cannot start with spin component one, spin position component three. That correlation function is zero, and we know it should be zero by symmetry, because I can flip S1 and I can flip S3. So if I have different components, the result should be zero. And indeed, it's zero, because I need to put sticks of the same color that connect one and so what we get is that the result says that A and B need to be the same. The components need to be the same. And then, once they are the same, I got just a bunch of sticks, and each of one comes with one, and the connection just comes with one, but these sticks are all of type A, all of color A, right? And therefore, we just get one times the path that goes from A to B in this example. Now, that's just based on learning what two spins give. What two spins give already allows us to study many paths, right? Already knowing two spins, again, let me emphasize, already knowing two spins, we can already see the contribution of all these weights of sticks, right? If I have some sticks like this, if I have my position B, in other words, and here position A, in other words, if I want to compute expectation value of S at position A, component A, spin at position B, component B, we see that from this, I get delta A needs to be equal to B. So for example, it could be component one, right? The component need to be the same. And then the sum over paths that go from A to B, T to the length of the path that goes from A to B. Right? So far, if paths are of this type, where I just bring down where this is just nij, which is equal to 1, I just bring down 1, and here at each position, I have ni, which is equal to 2, and I just need expectation value of two spins, which is what we computed there. Now, so it's equal to this plus other configurations. And this other configuration means with n ij bigger than 1, or n slash r, ni bigger than 2. So we just did a very small subset of configurations so far, but we already see these paths, right? And what we see in the path is that, again, we have n colors for sticks. Now we have this stick, we have this stick, and we have, say, this stick. So this would be an example for n equals to 3, right? And then when I start a path, if I have blue going to white, say, doesn't work because I need to start white. I need to start blue, and then it doesn't work. So this is equal to 0. But if I have blue, component blue going to component blue, then I just draw the paths that connect both. And for now, it looks like a small modification of what we did before, that we have a starting and end color, and I need to take into account that the color is conserved. For now, it looks like a very trivial modification of the random walk. But that's because we didn't finish the exercise. We just did two. Okay? Any question? I think can I continue there, or should I erase? What do you prefer? Do you prefer if I erase or I continue there?
Does the camera pick up over there?
I think it does. Yeah, there is a camera there. Should I continue there or should I erase? As you wish. Who wants me to continue there? Who wants me to erase? Okay, just two. Sorry, yeah, for those that sit in the front so that you can see very well. Okay, so let's continue. So all this was the conclusion, just again. So that's the conclusion arising from expectation value of SA SB equal to just 1 times delta AB, where A and B now are components, not positions, right? Because this expectation value always means that. Okay, now let's then ask what happens when I have 4. SA, SB, SC, SD. Okay, so now I have 4 components. So we have now 4 spins. So this would be what we would need to do to study, for example, what happens when I have 3 sticks meeting like that. Let's put one of the sticks to be a blue stick. Now we know sticks have color. So suppose we have this. Now, this would already be 0 automatically because there is an odd number of blue and an odd number of white, right? And because of this symmetry, right, that we can flip the sign of blue and of white, for sure the number needs to be the same. So this would be a bad example. So this would be okay. This would be a good candidate. So this is a good candidate to compute because the number of blue and the number of white is even, right? So we would have some component an even number of times, another type of component an even number of times. Now, just by symmetry of the problem, the fact that all indices are the same, we would conclude right away that the result now is some number. And then what's the only tensor I can write? It's just Kronecker delta. So the only thing I can write is delta AB delta CD plus permutations, because it's symmetric, it's fully symmetric, plus delta AC delta BD plus delta AD delta BC. So this is just based on it's the only thing I could write. And that's just encoding the statement that the result is 0 unless we have conservation of color, because we have a symmetry of Sx goes to minus Sx. So this means that this pair is equal and this pair is equal. This means this pair is equal and this pair is equal. This doesn't forbid all being exactly the same color, right? But forbids right away each one being of a different color. If it's S1, S2, S3, S4, it's 0 right away. Okay, and now we want to compute this hashtag. And how do we do it? Now let's use the same type of trick that we did before. So what could we do? Instead of doing the integral, let's use the same trick. So what is this? How would you do to trivialize the left-hand side? If you contract A and B, what do you get? When you say you put B equal A and you sum over A, what do you get?
N squared.
No, not N squared.
N.
You get S squared, and S squared is N, right? So I contract A and B, and I get N. I contract C and D, and I get N. So the left-hand side becomes N squared after we contract. So we contract A and B, and we contract C and D. We set them to be the same, and we sum over. Then the left-hand side gives N squared. So the right-hand side needs to give N squared. But what do the delta functions give? Let's see. So this one, I set A equal to B, I get 1. And I sum over N, I get N. Here I set C equal to D, I get 1. And I sum, and I get N. So indeed, this stuff here, this Kronecker delta, does give N squared under this contraction. Yes?
Why can't you contract A and C there as well?
No, I just chose this one because I want to construct S squared, because S squared is equal to N. So whenever I construct S square, it becomes a number. Now, I chose A and B and C and D. I could choose any other contraction.
Why don't you add those as well? Like, I'm saying that N square for this combination, N square for the combination that A and C are paired, and so on.
But it's here, right? This is here, A and C, B and D.
Yeah, why don't you do it on the left-hand side as well?
No, it's just a trick. This, do you agree with the first, with the equality? And now I'm saying, let me find a trick to compute the hashtag. I compute the left and right hand side for one component, one choice of indices.
Okay.
And the fact that they need to agree tells me what the hashtag is. And the choice of indices that I choose is to sum over n a and b and to sum over n c equal to d. Because that choice is very trivial. But I could choose a different one. For example, suppose I put 1, 1, 3, 3. You can also do, because now 1, 1, yeah, but it's much harder, right? I mean, 1, 1, 3, now you have to use isotropy, the fact that it's the same, to average. It's much, this is the simplest choice. Sum over A and B, get S square, N. S square, N. So the after I contract, I get N square. Now I see what I get here, and it must be N square. But it's not immediately N square, it's N square. But then what do I get here? A contracts with B, and then C contracts with D, so this gives... Just set B equal A and C equal D and do the contraction. What do I get? Sorry? Just set B equal A and repeat the indices, do the algebra. What do you get? N. You agree? Because you are setting, you set them to be the same. Now you have a sum of a single delta function. So this gives N. And what about this? Set A equal to B, C equal to D and do the sum. Same, N. And therefore, what's the hashtag? Well, we need to get n, but we are getting n squared plus 2n. So this hashtag is n squared over n squared plus n, plus 2n.
Hmm? Why does the right-hand side not have a term that's like three deltas that require all of them to be the same?
Because that's not an invariant tensor of SON. We started a model that has SON symmetry, right? So the only invariant tensors that I have is the delta function, right? So this object transforms each index. This object is invariant if I rotate all indices. So should this one be. So I should build it out of only the invariant tensors that I can build. No, that's not an invariant of SON. But of course, this doesn't forbid all indices to be the same. When all indices are the same, this is non-zero. This gives 3. If I put all indices to be the same, right? This gives 1, 1, 1, I get 3. So this hashtag is a third of the result when all the indices are the same. Right? Now, this is equal to this. So now it becomes more complicated. Because it means that because of this, right? Because of this factor here, now it means that these other configurations include, for example, configurations like this. And let's say here, now we have 4 spins at the same position, right? So 4 spins at the same position, it means now that there is an extra weight that is not our favorite 3, which was the ways of recombining, right? But now the weight that we get is related to that n square over n square plus n, where n is related to the number of components. And if we go to more than 4 particles meeting, right, we will get more complicated weights. And now here comes an idea, which is that there is a trick that we could do to kill this weight. What could we do if we want to set this weight to zero? Sorry? No, not orientation. I want to set this weight to zero. I want to set this weight here equal to zero. What could you imagine doing? When n is very large, I can ignore this small n down here. By the way, there is a 2 missing here. I can ignore this small n here, and I get n squared over n squared, which is 1. Then it's not 0. So what else could I do? How could I set this quantity to 0? Sorry?
Minus the term.
No, I want to set this one to 0. It looks strange, right? So n, this expression, how could we set it to zero? And the idea is we set it to zero when n goes to zero.
But
that's true. When n goes to zero, it goes to zero. Notice that it's not zero over zero. It's zero because this guy is much smaller than this one. So it goes like n. So at small n, this behaves as n over 2. At n much smaller than 1. And therefore, if I formally take n to 0, if I start with my ON model, and then I take n to 0, so first I start with my ON model, then the idea is we go... I cannot. Can you see here? So we went to our ON model, and we got a model of sticks and spins. Then we integrate this guy out, and we get some model of sticks. But now there are some weights that depend on n. And these weights, with these weights, this configuration doesn't have an obvious interpretation in terms of paths. But then to go to paths, we furthermore take the limit when n goes to 0. And we see that something remarkable happens, which is we kill the possibility of having 4 spins. Now the weight for 4 spins meeting at the same position is 0. And so what happens is that we have paths where these things are forbidden. So what are these type of paths where we forbid this? These are the self-avoiding walks. And so we conclude the following beautiful result, which is that this configuration, this equality, is the sum of self-avoiding walks from A to B if n goes to 0. And it deserves a box here. So there is a duality between the ON model when n goes to 0, correlation functions of 2 spins are equal to delta AB, because the components need to be the same, right? And then the generating function, exactly the same generating function, that we would call, this is what we would define this object here, we would call it G, like before, but now we would put an index self-avoiding walks instead of G of random walks, times the generating function of self-avoiding walks now. All you would have to do to check this is to check that the higher powers of S, when I put 6, I get n cubed, but then on the right, I get something which is not exactly n cubed, and therefore when n goes to 0, by the same argument, it goes to 0. This hashtag. And therefore, all these higher point spin interactions are 0, so we don't want more than 2 spins at each position. So we only allow 2 spins, but that means that it's just the simple paths, where I only have a stick connects to another stick and they never get close to each other. And therefore, if we want to be rigorous, what we could do is, because A needs to be equal to B, right? Let's put them to be equal to 1. Then I don't have this delta function, right? They are equal to 1. And then I say, that's it. Compute the expectation value of component 1 here, component 1 over there in the ON model. and then send them to zero, which is a bit funny because like you need at least, if you say one, it's because n is at least one, right? You need one component. So it's a bit weird, but you compute and then you send n to zero. In other words, if you define the model, notice if your starting point is here, it's very weird because here n is like an integer, right? For this to make sense. That's if we define here. But if our starting point is here, I integrate out the spins and I have sticks with some weights that depend on n, then it's totally okay. If this is my starting point, some statistical model of putting sticks, and whenever I have many sticks, I have some weight that depends on n, then n is just a parameter, right? So here, n is just a parameter that weights sticks configurations. So here, it's totally okay. So at this stage, n can be any real number or complex number. It is just measuring the weights of the stick configuration. So it depends what you take as your starting point. It's true that it's a very funny duality. If I take this to be my starting point, and then I'm starting to take n to zero. If I take the stick model to be my starting point, then it's there's nothing problematic with taking n to zero. Okay? And therefore, the claim would be the precise duality is that the two-point function S of the O n to zero model is the partition function of the self-avoiding walks that go from position A to position B. And the partition function of the O n model when n goes to zero, well, it's actually just one. Why? Because by the same argument, the only thing that could matter are the closed loops without self-intersection, right? So closed loops without self-intersection are the only things that could contribute. But then each closed loop comes with a factor of n because there are n possible choices for the color. And therefore, they are zero. You see? But if you want the next term, you could say it's 1 plus n times the sum of our single closed self-avoiding walks. But when n goes to zero, it's equal to one. Right? So that's the. If you take n to be small, if you allow yourself to keep the leading term, you have access to the self-avoiding box. Right? But if you set n strictly to zero, then it is just one. And so that's an example of another duality that we learn now between the O(n) model and self-avoiding box. This is a powerful duality because it tells you that if you are somehow especially in self-avoiding walks, in random walks, automatically you know about the statistical mechanical model when n goes to zero. And if you know a lot about this statistical mechanical model, for example, you know critical exponents, phase transitions, and so on this model, it translates into nice universality property of self-avoiding walks and random walks. So for example, in the last week of the lectures, we will try to study the self-avoiding walks by doing some renormalization and we'll predict some behavior. And then there is a way of testing very precisely this behavior. Is that the behavior that comes if I do a renormalization computation in the O(n) model and then send n to zero? And that's a test of whether what we are doing is correct or not, the fact that we have this duality. Okay? Okay, so we started a bit later, we are ending a bit later, but I think it's a good point to stop. So in the afternoon, I'll just summarize again what we just saw today, and we'll start attacking the now another high temperature expansion, namely the one of the Ising model.